Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon and Northern BC. This podcast aims to create a space for healing, understanding, and connection. Today on Recovery Stories, Victoria M. is with us. She is 38 and she's been on her sobriety journey for 9+ years. Welcome, Victoria.
Hello.
Please start anywhere you'd like with your story.
All right. Hello, folks. My name is Victoria Mills and I am grateful to be in recovery. My story begins when I was 4 years old with my first addiction. Now, this sounds kind of silly, but it was the kernel. Those 11 herbs and spices made my brain go zing. That feeling was what I wanted. It's what was missing in my life. My big life of 4 years, that is. Even at a young age, I felt different, like I didn't belong. My first sip of beer was when I was 8. Well, it was more like a chug. I remember not liking the taste, but the feeling it gave me was better than the chicken. I burped really loud after and got my first big laugh. That reaction gave me a sense of belonging. I did well in school, but any chance I got to go to a party with my older brother, I took it. At 14, I was beer-bonging beer, throwing up, and blacking out. I also discovered cannabis at this time. The two substances mixed together were magic to me. It took my sadness away and slowed down my fast-paced thoughts. When I was sober, I expected perfectionism from myself. From my grades to my looks. I didn't want people to think I didn't have control over my life. I felt so out of control in my head that I turned to controlling my food intake. I'd go 3 days just eating a piece of bologna, a bun, and a carrot. Then I'd do 48 laps a day in the pool, training to be a lifeguard. I felt sad a lot of the time and would cry out of nowhere, and people would comfort me and ask what's wrong. I'd make up a lie because I didn't even know why I was crying. You couldn't be sad for no reason, could you? All I knew was I felt lonely and I didn't know why. I was always around adults that were drinking because I wanted to laugh and tell funny stories like them. I started to hang out with older men and that led to 3 sexual assaults. I felt so much guilt and shame, like my body didn't belong to me. This made my self-worth hit an all-time low. I'd drink and become promiscuous, unable to say no to men's sexual advances. I had so little respect for myself that I wouldn't make the guys wear condoms. I ended up getting an STI, and the doctor scolded me, saying that she could have given me a death sentence. Well, that comment sent me into a tailspin of fear. I could not think of my mortality without having a drink or copious amounts of cannabis. I couldn't be alone with my thoughts. I was riddled with fear. Soon I tried cocaine, and I didn't like it. Then someone said, "Here, try this," and handed me my first crack hit. I fell in love instantly. Everything about it I loved. Plus, it took away my pain, made me forget I was going to die someday. I didn't feel alone. It numbed me completely. I thought it was the answer to all my problems. I managed to get myself through healthcare attendant school and found a job at a nursing home in Regina, Saskatchewan. I was kind of proud of myself for that achievement, but I always thought I could do or be better. I thought I had a sense of purpose, but soon after I started, I faced death again, feeling so lost and powerless over my life. I wanted to honor their memory by having drinks and drugs. I didn't know how to grieve properly or express my emotions in a healthy way. All I knew was to get drunk and high. I spent the next 8.5 years as a party girl, living paycheck to paycheck. I thought I was living life to the fullest, making new friends and memories, even though there were times I couldn't remember the night before, and I didn't know who was in my bed or crashed out on the couch. When I was not binging on alcohol and drugs, I would feel desperate, hopeless, and unloved, all alone, feeling like I didn't deserve happiness. I'd call a friend crying my eyes out, but all that was offered to me as a solution was more alcohol and drugs. I didn't believe I had a problem because I had a job, a vehicle, a place to live, and I paid my bills. Well, kind of paid my bills. I wouldn't pay them until right before things were cut off. My life was completely unmanageable, but I faked it so no one else knew how lost I really was. I had this false sense of pride and importance because I was connected to people in the drug world. I had a huge ego, either thinking I was the shit or a piece of shit. I never believed I was equal to anyone. One night, I was up to my usual shenanigans, being a bar star, making people laugh, and I made a new friend who asked me if I could get them meth. I'd never done meth before, but I was on a determined mission to find it so I could seem cool to this new person. I found it eventually and was given some as a hookup fee. I ended up reconnecting with an old friend by calling her up and telling her what I had. I went over there and she showed me how to use it. I hated the taste, but I looked at my formerly fat friend, now a size 2, cleaning up a storm and projects on the go. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to clean and organize. I wanted to do something other than do lines all night with the same people, listening to the same music and the same stories. I wanted something different from life. Hindsight is 20/20, and I realize now that what I wanted, what I craved, was recovery. I used meth every day for 9 months. I lost a bunch of weight from not eating, and my place looked clean and organized. I received a bunch of external validation for my efforts. With meth by my side, I felt like I was in control of everything. I had finally found the answer to my problems, or so I thought. Soon I started using at work, stealing from the vulnerable. I staged a break-in at my own home so I could steal my best friend's big jar of change in his room, along with designer watches and bags to trade for more drugs. I also met a guy who I fell deeply in love with and was able to confess for the first time I had a problem. He tried to help me. I got off of it for 9 days, but was tortured by my own thoughts and emotions. This drug had completely rewired my brain. I even tried fighting someone at Boston Pizza. I'd go missing for days, only coming home to sleep when I couldn't find any. Soon, my parents got involved. They got a mental health warrant for my arrest, but I knew what I had to say to get me thrown in the psych ward, and I wasn't going to tell them I had voices in my head or that I so desperately wanted to die. It took another mental health warrant for my arrest to finally give in and confess. I saw shadow people and heard voices in my head. I didn't want to live anymore. I was admitted into the psych ward at Regina General Hospital and introduced to all the helpful resources for the still suffering addict. I had lost everything because of drugs and was homeless. My psychiatrist suggested I stay at my aunt's place, a woman's shelter. I had never heard of it, so my first question was, "Is your aunt okay with having an addict stay with her?" I thought the psychosis would go away after a week, but they did not. I was convinced it was people using technology against me to punish me for what I did. I suffered with psychosis for over 7 years. I was a prisoner in my mind. They told me if I got 2 years sober, they would stop, that the guy I deeply loved would come back, and my best friend Dawn would forgive me for lying and stealing. This motivated me because I wanted it to come true so badly. I started going to 12-step meetings in Regina and got to 14 months sober and clean. I missed beer and weed and thought I could keep it to just that. But this disease is a progressive illness, and soon I was back on meth. I wasn't stealing this time, and I thought I was only hurting myself, so that was okay, right? My longtime friend Troy moved up to the Yukon and opened a restaurant that he wanted me to work at. I used meth for the last time on February 22nd, 2019. My friend flew me up a month later. I needed the geographical location change for sure, but I couldn't escape myself. I started drinking again, and I embarrassed myself greatly every time. I still had psychosis tormenting me with the voices of my best friend and the love of my life. I started going to meetings again because that seemed to appease the voices. I met some of the most beautiful souls in those rooms, and they became some of my most cherished friends. I worked with a counselor and was introduced to CBT and DBT and mindfulness. These tools helped me stop self-harming, and I felt a little hope in my heart. I also found I felt less lonely because I was connecting with other addicts who got it. My recovery family started to grow and my attitude changed. Instead of asking, why is this happening to me? I reframed it and asked myself, what is this trying to teach me? Changing my perspective was hard, but worth it. I did the 12 steps and got the gift of acceptance, but something was still missing from my life. I thought it was my ex-boyfriend, but actually I was pretty sure of that when I got to my 2-year sobriety birthday. The voices weren't gone and my love hadn't spoken to me in years. So I picked up the drink and the drugs again, but recovery had ruined my using. I couldn't enjoy it like I once had. I'd binge, then get 2 to 4 months in, relapse, and repeat. My recovery had always been for someone or something else, but not for me, because I still felt I wasn't deserving of happiness. After a 2-month binge, driving a drug dealer around, I ran out of money and finally decided I didn't want this life for me anymore. So I told my boss at the hospital I needed help. She spoke kind words to me and gave me the time off to go to treatment. I really started to pray to Creator, begging for help. This definitely helped with the obsession, and a calming peace would flow throughout me. When I got out of treatment, I slowly started to stop doing the things that helped, and I was back to overeating and oversleeping. I didn't know how to find balance in my recovery, and a part of me still wanted to do it on my own. But the opposite of addiction is connection. And I needed my family of understanding and the unconditional love of a power greater than myself. Milestones, money, and boredom are my major triggers. So I quit counting the days. I gave my money to a trusted friend and got active doing sober activities with other people in recovery. My last time using, I had a spiritual awakening. The drugs were gone and I was thinking of getting more. But in that moment, a peaceful, loving, non-judgmental presence came to me and said, "That's enough, Vicky." I had money in the bank and the dealer was calling to check in. And I was able to put down the drugs. I was finally done. I threw out my paraphernalia, deleted numbers, forgave myself, and said thank you to my higher power. I pray to God every day now. I do something every day for my recovery so I may keep this beautiful gift I've been so freely given. I've now completed my second set of steps and my spiritual awakening was the gift of wholeness. I no longer seek for external factors or validation to fill the empty void in my heart. I put prayer, my love, and of course Creator's love to help me feel complete. I now have balance in my life that eluded me for years. I eat right, exercise, and meditate daily. I work at the hospital helping people and get to work with some of the most amazing people I've ever met. I've been on this journey for 9.5 years. I quit counting the consecutive days because in all reality, that's all we have is just for today. So I live just for today. If you're struggling right now, I pray for you. And a little mantra that helped me was to never quit quitting. We all deserve recovery, love, and happiness. Thank you so much for listening to my story. Here's to another 24 hours of recovery. And always remember that I may not know you, but I love you. And if people can hate for no reason, then I can love for no reason.
When you go out to social functions and things like that now, do you have a game plan?
Yes. I always have an exit strategy, and I always bring my own beverages. I also recover out loud because I almost died in silence. And yeah, I try to go and hang out with people that are in recovery too, like-minded people. Like, we're just, you know, we're trying to better ourselves, and we've been there, we've done that, and we know we're not missing out on anything anymore. It is a little harder at the hospital dealing with the still suffering addict and alcoholic because I'm there to help them and sometimes they are using outside of the hospital. And in that case, I just turn my back and I walk back in and I call my sponsor. You know, and I can't say enough how amazing the staff is at the White Horse General Hospital. Like, I can go to any one of them. Everybody knows I'm in recovery. And if I'm having a hard day, they'll just freaking talk with me for like 5 minutes and just like, okay, why am I here? What am I doing? Like, I wouldn't have this beautiful job where I help people if I was still out there using. And to be able to give back is huge. Addiction is such a self-centered disease and we're so selfish in it. So you help and you be service to others. And it's just, you start getting to validate yourself. And like, I don't get me wrong, like I still, you know, post on Facebook of pictures and stuff and I'm like, oh, there's my external validation meter going up, boop, 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 boop. But I don't need it for my self-esteem anymore, which is huge.
What are you the most excited for in the future?
I am super excited for the woman I'm yet to become. I'm super excited for her. Back in Regina, I applied for the registered psych nursing program because mental health and addictions kind of a passion of mine now. And I feel like my experience, strength, and hope could really help somebody. So I'm looking to gain more confidence in my intellect so I could go back to school. And yeah, my sponsor told me now that I've done 2 sets of steps, I can put my name on the temporary sponsor list. So I might have a sponsee one day and hope that I could help them with my story. And that's a recovery dream of mine. So
that's great. Mm-hmm. What would you say that you're the most grateful for in your sobriety?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd have to say my attitude of gratitude, just the fact that no matter what, every day I get up and I am grateful to be alive. I, as my dad would say, I woke up on the right side of the grass. So it's a good day to try again.
Thank you so much, Victoria.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please reach out to our website at storiesytbc.com for supports in your area. Or if you'd like to share your story on this podcast, please email storiesytbc@gmail.com.